So we're very fortunate this morning to have in studio with us Don Smeltzer, a lifelong music lover who is a fifth-generation Benzie County resident who has spent 3 decades working on his 125-acre family farm just across the road from Upper Herring Lake. Don is a graduate of both Frankfort High School and the University of Michigan and has served Benzie County in a number of important positions and remains a community activist to this day. Good morning, Don, and welcome to Woo Woo.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mark and Carol. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Can you tell us when and where you were born?
Yes, I was born in Frankfort, up on the hill at Paul Oliver Memorial Hospital, back in the days when they still delivered babies there. My doctor was Dr. Camp. He was here for many years in Benzie County, and I'm a twin. I have a twin sister, although she was born first, so I ended up being the very youngest in our family of 7 children.
Okay, could you tell us a little bit more about your parents and your nuclear family?
Yes, my father, Percy J. Smeltzer, and my mother was Helen Smeltzer. Helen Hughes was her maiden name. They had an interesting background. My dad grew up here in Benzie County, and at that time the family had a dairy out on Joyfield Road, where the current location of Smeltzer Orchard Company is, where the fruit processing plant is. But they had a dairy, and they raised dairy cattle. Long tradition of raising dairy cattle. And my mother grew up in Washington, D.C., and she had a lot of interesting stories about growing up in Washington, D.C. And they were both kind of, they met each other, they both had some tragedies. My father went to the war, Second World War, when he was in Kentucky before he went to Europe. He started out, interestingly, at Michigan Agricultural College. It was MAC at that time. Now it's Michigan State University. And he was in ROTC program, and he was in the cavalry, which as they were getting to the late 1930s, they were phasing out the cavalry. They still had it, but it all turned into armored infantry units. So he was actually in a He was sent to Kentucky as part of his armored infantry training, and he was in a basically tank corps, and he met this lady in he was in Fort Knox, and her name was Renee Bittenbender, and they got married, and they had 2 daughters, my half-sisters, Lucille and Mary Pat Smeltzer. They both went to school here in Frankfort, and there might be classmates around that remember them. After the war, my dad came home, but Renee developed cancer, and she died in 1949, I believe. 1950, I guess, somewhere like that. And my mother had married, she had gone to school at Indiana University, and she met a man there, Charles Littell. He was also in the ROTC, and he was a medical student learning to be a doctor. And actually, he finished that and was in the Army. And he was in France a month after D-Day, and he was killed by a German sniper during the follow-up after the invasion of Normandy. So the interesting thing was that Charles and Renee were cousins, and my mother had a daughter from that first marriage, my oldest half-sister. Her name is Mary Littell. Renee and Charles were cousins, and so when Renee was sick and getting sicker and knew she was not going to live, she encouraged my father to begin writing to my mother. And in the course of that correspondence, they came to know each other, and ultimately they got married in 1951 in Washington, D.C. And she came back here to Northern Michigan. But she had never learned to drive, so before she moved to Michigan, she took driving lessons in Washington and came up here. Most of the roads were all gravel roads. There were very few paved roads at that time. But she often said she wondered, what have I gotten myself into? So yeah. It was such a different existence from what she knew in Washington, D.C. And then they went ahead and had my sister Ann and my brother Ronald, and then the two twins, Susan and me, myself. Okay. So that's kind of our history. It's a blended family.
You need an organizational chart to keep on top of all that, it sounds like.
It's about like that, yes.
So you were saying that your family was in the dairy business. Were you also growing any fruits on the land at all, or did that come later?
Oh, yeah. Most farms back in the early part of the 20th century, they all grew fruit, plus had cattle, and some had dairy cattle. So, yeah, they were doing that. And the origin of the fruit processing was that during the Second World War, they had a very hard time. They had a dairy here in Benzie County, and they also did a milk processing down in Manistee, in the city of Manistee, on River Street, going east from 31, as they were located. And they had delivery trucks. And during the war, they got to where they had a terrible time getting tires for the delivery trucks. Everything was rationed and in short supply. And then, in addition, all the industrial equipment got very valuable. And one day, an equipment dealer, a broker, came around and was telling my grandfather, I can get you so much money for this piece of equipment, so much for something else. And he said, you can really get that kind of money for this equipment? And he said, yeah. So my grandfather said, well, we're out of the dairy business. And he went and opened the drain and drained all the milk down the floor drain. And they shut down overnight and quit the dairy business.
So do you have a lot of those glass?
There are milk bottles. I do have a little collection of my own.
I bet.
And I have a relative who's quite interested in collecting bottles. And he was showing me online there's all kinds of Smeltzer Brothers dairy bottles available.
So that was during the World War II that the dairy actually shut down then completely.
Yeah, I don't know what people did the next morning when they wanted their milk delivery, but
wow. They
had to get it from somebody else. It was done.
Did you grow apples and cherries?
Oh, yeah. Then our family, okay. We were growing apples, and my grandfather, he had been growing, and they had interestingly, at one time down here in Alberta, at the old cabbage shed building, there was a little group of growers who packed apples there, and they hired my grandfather to run the packing line. My dad said he used to go down there. He'd have to go down there with my grandfather. He said it was such a cold, drafty place. He hated to be there, but they would pack apples into wooden barrels and ship them out to Chicago and other urban areas. That was one thing they used to do down in Alberta.
What kind of apples?
Well, all kinds, although the Jonathan variety was very popular, and the Northern Spy, which made nice pies, was also a very popular apple. A lot of people liked those. Plus, this part of Michigan grew a very nice Macintosh apple. It would be generally a firm apple and would color up pretty well with nice red color. So a Macintosh was also popular.
And it would last.
And you could store them. If you kept them cold, they would last.
Yeah.
They're some of the nicest apples I like.
Did you grow any Cortlands?
We never grew any on our farm. Some growers had them, mm-hmm. and they are grown around. It's kind of a northern variety. I know Wisconsin grows a lot of Cortlands, and up in the Upper Peninsula, different people would have Cortlands.
Yeah, that, in my family, it goes way back generations. For canning purposes.
You like Cortlands?
Oh, I love it because it's a little tart.
Yeah.
With just a hint of sweet.
Yep, that's right. That's the characteristic of it. It's a very nice apple.
Oh.
Yeah.
But it's perishable, so you got to get it. Yeah, you got to get it in the jars or in the freezer.
I think this next question is one that Carol dreamed up. Did you grow grapes? Because she tried to grow grapes. She wanted table grapes, and after they grew, she found out they were Concord grapes, so she was kind of disappointed about that.
But I did make juice.
Yeah, you can make nice juice.
Excellent.
Yeah, lots of, but, you know, it's like, any juice you could buy in the store, nothing really unique about buying Welch's grape juice. It's basically Concord juice. But I have not really grown grapes. I did plant some shortly after I was married. I got some varieties from a nursery in New York, wine grapes. I wanted to grow some wine grapes because I thought we could grow really good wine grapes around here. And the Our county extension agent at the time, Andy Norman, he always told me, he said he was pretty sure Benzie County could grow better wine grapes than Leelanau County.
Wow.
Because our slopes face south better. In Leelanau, they have a lot of ridges that run north and south, and they have some nice sites facing east and west, but he thought, you know, a south-facing slope would grow a better grape generally. So I tried it, but I never really got into the business, and other guys have grown them, but it hasn't really taken off in Benzie County like they have up in Leelanau and Grand Traverse County.
Going back to the cherries, okay, yeah. So your dad or your grandfather started, had apples and cherries? Or did
they grew both.
Okay.
Everybody always had a few of both in their farm. And
so who did you sell them to?
Oh, my grandfather would, there was a man, his name was Sam Cahotas, and he's quite well known in the Upper Peninsula too. He owned a lot of banks, and people have different opinions about the man, but he dealt in fruit quite a bit. And he would come out to the farm and contract with him to buy whatever crop he was going to have, my grandfather, and so they'd pack him up and send him out wherever he wanted him sent. And there was a while my grandfather went down to Detroit and was actually working a wholesale produce house on the produce market in Detroit. He spent several years down in Detroit doing that. It was where all the restaurants and the stores would go to buy their produce.
Okay.
And they had these little produce, little shops up and down the truck dock where they would sell their produce. Okay. It was a wholesale produce market. Eastern Market, that's what they call
Eastern
it.
Market.
When I was in grade school, there used to be an Iowa test where they'd ask you all these questions and figure out what career was good for you. One of the careers was being a cherry picker, and we've interviewed a few people, and they told us about their experience in picking cherries, and they said it was very hard work, and they would never want to go back to that kind of thing. Did you have that same experience, or did you fall
yes.
in love with picking cherries?
Yes, I did. We used to pick into a wooden lug. We'd use a 10-quart pail, and You'd go up the ladder and pick the cherries, come down to put it in the lug. It took forever to fill that wooden lug. It seems like it took me forever to do it. I think I could do 4 lugs in a day. I was not a very good cherry picker. It's like 100 pounds or less. I'd probably get fired today.
So where did you attend grade school? What was it like back in the day?
I went to grade school here in Frankfort, and I really had a great time. The principal, Mr. Laverne Chilcote, was here, and one of my favorite grades was fifth grade. I had a teacher, Phil Kirshner was his name. Mr. Kirshner, I thought was the coolest year I had in school. And Mr. Chilcote lived here in Alberta. He had a home. And I always thought it was kind of neat. I'd go past and my mother would point out, that's where Mr. Chilcote lives. One day we went by and I saw him sitting on this out on the front step, and I waved at him. He waved back. I thought that was kind of cool.
You grew up during the 60s and 70s here in northern Michigan, which included an assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and Robert Kennedy, the Civil Rights Movement, the Vietnam War, the Watergate scandal. Well, at least we landed on the moon. How did these events in your growing up affect you?
Well, I have a dim memory. I was in first grade when President Kennedy was assassinated. And I don't remember a lot about it. You know, we rode the school bus. But on that day, my mother came into town and picked us all up and took us home in the car and was telling us what had happened to President Kennedy in Dallas. But that one, I don't remember so much other than it was just unusual to get picked up. I'd go home with Mom in the car. The year I really remember was 1968, and that was, I was in fifth grade. Mr. Kirshner was my teacher, and he was, it was kind of interesting. I really liked the guy, but I had grown up in a pretty conservative family, and they were all Republicans, but Mr. Kirshner was a Democrat, and I always thought, am I supposed to like this guy? He's a Democrat. I don't know if I'm supposed to like him, but I do like him. And he was a really great teacher. I had a great time. And I remember when Dr. King was assassinated, we came to school, and it was, you know, everybody was quite upset about it. And, you know, it was the days of anti-war protests, and they were often quite violent. Student protests going on, which I didn't pay too much attention to it. But I remember, what I do remember was the day when Senator Kennedy was assassinated. My sister came upstairs. We hadn't got on the bus. We were getting ready, and she came upstairs in tears. And I thought, what is wrong? And I went downstairs. My mother said, well, Senator Kennedy was shot last night. It was upsetting because of the violence of it. And then I got to school, and Mr. Kirshner was really upset. He was slamming books on his desk and slamming the closet door, and it was just a very upsetting time in America. My grandparents in Washington, you know, they would come to visit, and they'd have news stories of Martin Luther King on television. They did not like, they were basically racists, and he did not like Martin Luther King. And I thought, what's wrong with this guy? And it was just the way America was. The civil rights people didn't, they had not accepted or embraced the concept of civil rights and racial equality. But it was coming. And even today, we still have some problems with people. There are white supremacists. And the thought has never died off completely, but we've got to keep making progress on equality and promoting people that have been on the margins. They got to have their chance in America too, like everyone else.
So now we want to move on to your high school years. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, it was, I enjoyed high school. I remember I was never real athletic. I was always pretty skinny, and I always kept thinking, why can't I gain weight? I'd see all my buddies, they'd be getting heavy, and I was a skinny little guy. I was always the littlest guy in my class. And my freshman year, I played basketball, and I really had a great time. Our coach was Mike Nagy. He also taught government at the high school, but he was our coach for freshman basketball. And we used to have to practice in the gym starting at 6 in the morning. So my dad would drive us in and drop me off, and we'd get Ray and had practice from 6 to 8 o'clock in the morning. That was the chance the freshmen got to use the gymnasium. So I remember I hated having to get up so early and come in for basketball practice. But I realized I was never going to really be much of an athlete. So then I got interested in my band program. And I remember, interestingly, Carl Knopfsinger was the center on our freshman basketball team because he was the tallest. And I always played guard, and there were a couple other guys. One game, all the tall guys had fouled out, and I was the only guy left to send in, and I had to play center. And I was totally outmatched on that position. I was the shortest guy on the team, but everybody else had fouled out. They had nobody else. I usually got to play basketball when we were so far ahead we couldn't lose, or we were so far down we were never going to win. That was my basketball career. After that, I got into my music. I got quite interested. We had a teacher in Frankfurt, Kendall Gunlicks. And he was a really great guy, and I learned a lot from him. That's when I started my music interest.
What instruments did you play?
I played the French horn at that time, and I wasn't real good at it. There was always somebody better, but I kept at it, and I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
So you carried that on. In college, also.
Yeah, that's Mr. Gunlicks. I decided I wanted to learn to play the trumpet, and he gave me some lessons one summer, and I learned so I could, for marching band, I would play trumpet, and then during concert band season, I'd play the French horn. And then when I went to college, I tried out and for the marching band, and I got in at U of M in the marching band. They had 60 trumpets, and I was the 58th. Chair. I was two chairs. I made it by
you
two chairs.
You were still there. That's I don't think that's an easy thing to do, to be in Novell's band.
I was really kind of surprised when I made it, but I enjoyed it. I had a great time in the marching band in Ann Arbor.
So, yes. Don, you graduated from high school in June of 1975, was it?
Yes, that's right.
So then you would have been in Michigan the following fall?
In fall 75,
so
yes.
If people want to look for you in pictures of the band or anything, that's where they should start
your
journey.
That's the place from 75. I was in the band for 3 years. I didn't do it my senior year, although I probably could have. But I went to the business school, transferred over to that my junior year, and I decided after junior year I'd better pay more attention to my classwork, so I dropped the marching band.
Your sister Ann also graduated for U of M.
Yes, she was a pharmacy major.
Any other legacy?
Yes, my sister Lucille got a master's degree, I think in social work, from the University of Michigan.
Wow.
And my sister, my oldest sister Mary, yeah, I got a degree in music education and with emphasis in vocal music from the University of Michigan.
That was where you were going.
Well, it was either that or Michigan State. That's the way our family was. It was so well divided allegiance. But they're both great schools.
So who went to Michigan State?
My sister Mary Pat, that was... and then my brother Ronald and my twin sister Susan. Those were the three schools. There are three kids that went to the Michigan State.
So what did your twin graduate in?
She got her degree in food science. You know, so many things, you get your degree in one subject and you end up doing something else. It's a marker that you could achieve something, but it isn't always the thing that really sets you up for your niche in life.
Oh yeah, I was always told it just showed you were trainable.
That's a good way to look at it. And
you could complete a task.
Yes,
because you graduated.
Yes, and you could go through you jump through a series of hoops, and you get your degree at the end, and it might be entirely unrelated to what you do later in life.
Right. One thing we wanted to kind of cover that would bridge both high school and college is, did you work after school or during the summers, and what kind of jobs did you do?
Well, my mom, dad, didn't really, they wanted us to do well in school, and they weren't ever too, they weren't ever too worried that we had to have a summer job, although living on a farm, there was always work to be done. So I usually worked on the farm, doing jobs, trying to pick cherries one year, like I said. The summer after I graduated in 1975, I worked over at our family-owned business, Smeltzer Orchard Company. And that was an interesting summer because I was working back. They had these pits we used to put the sweet cherries in, and then they would leave the cherries in there for several months with some bleaching chemicals, and it would bleach the color out, and then the sweet cherries would be pumped out at the end of the summer and sent for processing into maraschino cherries. So I worked back on these pits, and it was a great summer because you were out in the sun. I got the best suntan that summer, and I was very, very tanned up and dark. It was, I went to town one day, nobody recognized me. I'd gotten so dark working on the brine pits with cherries.
So back in the day in agriculture, there was quite an influx of migrant workers were there during the picking season.
There used to be an army of people to pick all these cherries. You know, this was in days before the mechanical harvesting started. So, there'd be many, many more migrant laborers would come to this part of Michigan.
And is that getting more challenging now? I know you've...
Yeah, everything is much different now. Of course, now any labor you hire you've got to be very careful that they're either legal, they're either citizens or they have a legal permission to work in the United States. And the attitude toward migrants, toward any kind of foreign laborers is so different from what we used to have. And it's kind of sad. It's the end of a whole era. But it's much different now. A lot of growers have gone to using this program called an H-2A program, special visa. You can have workers come in, but you have to guarantee, you know, 40 out, you have to spell it out in front. And I'm not real familiar with it because I've never really used H-2A labor, but it's a special visa program for agricultural workers. And people come in, you have to pay, you guarantee 40 hours a week, you have to provide transportation, housing, and minimum wage, which is kind of determined from a federal term called the adverse effect wage rate. So most of the H-2A workers have to get around $17 and some cents per hour as minimum. And you get a guarantee 40 hours. And if you have a bad week with, you know, bad weather, you can't work outside, you still got to pay the 40 hours. So it's a pretty expensive program for growers now.
The other thing we wanted to cover is, after your graduation, you served in a number of various roles in Benzie County. Do you think you could share that experience with us?
Yeah, I would talk about that a little bit. I had a great time. I was township supervisor for 16 years in Blaine Township, and that all started with, I'd been here several years, living up here quite a few years. I bought a little house and on Mick Road. And the supervisor at that time, Dave Mead, stopped in. He said, "Don, I'd like to have you on our board of review," which I was not real familiar with. And, our job was to review the assessment roll, make sure the assessor was doing it in general fairly, and there weren't any particular wrong things going on with the assessments. And Dave Mead was the assessor at that time and the supervisor. And so I did that. I enjoyed the board of review. People would come in, they'd get pretty riled up. They'd really chew on you if they were mad. But I liked the process of how they arrived at these assessments. There was a whole manual that the assessor would use, and you could take a house, take the measurements, and look at the quality of construction and figure this all out and get a value for the house and the buildings, the barns. This manual was amazing. It had so many different buildings and all these different factors. So I found it quite interesting. But then Dave Mead wanted to go run for county commission. So he said, I'm going to resign and I'd like you to put your name in to be appointed to be township supervisor. So I got appointed in 1990, December of 1990. Dave had gotten elected to the county commission, and he went on later and served a term in the legislature as our legislator. So I got appointed in 1990. I had to run for office in 1992, and I was the township supervisor until 2006.
We understand you also played an important role of establishing the Benzie Shores District Library when they were looking for partners in that.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the proudest things I can point to from my experience as a township supervisor. The city of Frankfort was on the verge of, everybody's always short of money, and the city was on the verge of closing their city library, which I had been going to for years and enjoying it. They came out with, they wanted to form a district library, which would require to have a district, you have to have two units of government or more decide they want to form a district. And then they have to vote for a millage to support the district library. So I didn't want to see the library in Frankfort close. And so I was encouraging this idea with our township board, and came down to a vote. The township board had to decide, are we going to join and form a district library? And there was quite a bit of reluctance because we knew it was going to involve a millage to support the library. If we formed the district, there were more voters in Frankfort than in Blaine Township. And we knew the millage would probably pass, and we'd end up having to pay the millage. But I kept telling them, look at the benefit we're going to have in. We did form the library, the district library. We did get outvoted. The millage lost in Blaine Township, but it won in Frankfort. We were already in the district, so we all ended up paying it, and we have a wonderful library now.
So you went on to be a county commissioner as well, did you?
Yes, I got appointed in the spring of 2006. And I had to run that fall, I did win one election running for county commissioner. But then in 2008, I had always run as a Republican. But in 2008, my cousin Don Tanner beat me. He won the election in 2008, and it was a big year. That was the year President Obama got elected. So I was off the commission. I served a very short, little over 2 years. But it was a good experience.
One thing we want to know about, too, is it seems like many people from the next generation of your family managed to stay in the area. I know that's kind of difficult for a lot of young people growing up here. Quite often they get educated and they move out of the area. So how did your family get some success in that realm?
Well, really, my immediate family, I had five children, and only our youngest one, lives in the area. All others are downstate. But our daughter Kristen and her husband, Stephen Nelson, had the little alpaca farm on River Road.
Oh.
And so she's been able to stay in the area. And she likes farm. She grew up on the farm. She likes the farm experience, I think. And Kristen and Steph do a great job with these little alpacas.
I have a question. Okay, you went to U of M. Did you come back here
Yes.
And so you always lived in this area.
Interestingly, my senior year, I was in the car heading for Ann Arbor, Mom, Dad driving me down, and I said, I am never coming back to Benzie County. I said, I'm so glad to be out of here. And then 4 years later, I'm back in Benzie County, and I've been here ever since.
Wow.
So sometimes, never is a long time, and people should be careful declaring, I'm never going to do something. Yeah. Life has a way of coming back, and you end up doing exactly what you say you're never going to do.
So unless I missed this, so when you came back, you were working in the business.
Yes, so my father and my uncle. Yeah.
The accounting part of it, or you in the field?
Not so much. I was mostly out in the field. Okay. I did all kinds. The first job I had was weed spraying with the weed killers. And funny thing, it was not a hard job to learn how to do. And I remember one day that used to drive me nuts. The nozzles would plug up on the weed sprayer boom. You'd have to stop and get off the tractor, go unplug the nozzle. And I never realized it really at the time, but the weed killers are probably more toxic than the poison that we spray for bug controls. I've had an armload of Roundup dripping off my elbow.
Why? I mean, if it's apple trees and cherry trees, why do you have to kill the weeds?
Well, the grass under the tree competes with, takes water and nutrients away from the tree. Plus, it makes it hard to, walk around the tree. If you're picking the apples, your feet get all tangled up, but you don't keep a kill strip under the tree.
Oh.